Hello and welcome to the What's Cooking podcast. This is our Adjusting With mini-series where we're chatting to some of our past guests to hear updates on how their businesses are going and highlight any new initiatives that they might be working on at the moment. They'll be talking us through how they're adapting to challenges and generally keeping going during this time.
If you want to find out more about these guests that we're chatting to, and we definitely recommend you do that, you can scroll back through our archive and find whole episodes with these guests. You can learn about their businesses and what they're about. We really hope you enjoy these mini episodes and that you find some kind of comfort or inspiration in what they have to say.
Hey, Tessa, how's it going?
It's challenging. I will say it's challenging more than I thought.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, this would be easy. I work from home. How hard could it be? And of course, it's a lot harder because you're so restricted.
It's just also strange. Yeah. I've been feeling just so tired, more tired than usual for not really any specific reason.
I read something really interesting that said that our subconscious is having to process this. So however much you pretend that it's all fine and you're getting on okay, that's all happening underneath. And that is cognitively difficult to handle.
Yeah. You must be missing your swimming, is what I'm thinking. When you're posting really lovely videos of the Thames, but you must be really missing swimming.
I'm so tempted to throw myself in there. Watch this space, at some point it's going to happen.
You say that I've had some horror stories of rowers who have picked up some pretty nasty diseases from the Thames.
So where are you, Kat? Are you somewhere nice?
I'm actually in Wales. So I'm feeling pretty fortunate. We're really lucky. We've got lots of space. There's nothing much around us, although it feels very removed from everything that's going on. Yeah, it's odd sometimes feeling kind of far away from everyone.
Yeah, but isn't that nice that you can step out and not necessarily think I'm going to have to do the COVID sidestep on the pavement just to avoid people, and I can actually lengthen my stride and step out. I mean, we can't do that around here unless we did go to Richmond Park last weekend, because we figured we could drive there in 7 minutes, which we reckoned meant that our walking would be longer than our drive. And it proved to be, we were there for about 3 hours, which I know is bad, but, you know, it's so easy to socially distance there. You don't have to be within, I don't know, half a mile of anyone if you choose not. You know, you don't have to be close to people. So it felt a bit bad and I'd been resisting it as an impulse, but I just thought I have got to go somewhere that isn't just Chiswick House over and over again.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's got to be a balance, and, you know, obviously we need to protect people's physical health, not our own necessarily, but, you know, other people's around, but actually mental health is so important and one just has to get out. And, you know, if you're in London, if you're not too far from a space like that, I don't see that there's really, you know, it's just, you just have to, don't you? You've got to just get a bit of headspace.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've been watching people who are living on their own going quietly mad, and you can see people even on Instagram just getting sort of too stuck inside themselves. So I did actually say to someone, I've been messaging them, and I said, look, do you want a call? Would you like a call? And she said, oh God, yes, call me. So we've agreed to do a call, but it's, I think it's a fine line, because you just can feel people's emotional distress. And equally, I think you have to be careful not to put that out. And that's also quite challenging, when you might actually be wanting to say, actually, it's really hard today, and I just binged Pump Street chocolate and Pip and Nut and alternately all afternoon, you know. So I think there's quite a lot of self-policing that probably everybody is doing, just to kind of, I don't know, lower the general. I mean, everybody's being really chirpy and they're going like, pivot now. If you haven't pivoted, why haven't you pivoted? You know, which I think is also another pressure that people like me don't need, because I'm not entirely sure how pivotal my business is in any case. And I think it'd be a completely changed landscape when retail comes back, if it even does, because they're now saying social distancing till the end of this year.
Yeah.
You know, and you walk into a supermarket and it's just so profoundly different, and people behave differently and everything is different, and, you know, the brands are different, and it's just a totally different experience. It's fraught and it's stressy and it's grab what you need and get out. And I don't know, it just feels to me so profoundly different. I can't actually imagine that going back to normal.
Yeah, and I imagine within kind of, you know, supermarket, because you're right, it is kind of get in, grab what you need and get out. And how much space is there within that for new brands? Because probably people are really gravitating towards, you know, the brands that they already buy, they trust, the items they know they need. And if you're someone that's kind of, you know, if you're a new company trying to kind of get in on that, it's going to be really difficult, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, apparently M&S are looking at new brands because they are putting more brands in, but I'm in a FMCG WhatsApp group and people are just saying, you know, that if you're a small brand, you are being delisted, which means if they haven't got an online operation or they can get into an aggregated sort of online list, then it's incredibly difficult. I've spoken to people also, my clients, who've lost like 60% of their revenue because food service is closed, you know, trains and cafes and, you know, places, you know, where they were selling. 60% of your revenue gone overnight. I mean, that is incredibly hard to survive. So, I mean, I'm not in that situation. I'm very happy in, you know, that that's not the case. But I fear that many brands just cannot survive it. They don't necessarily qualify for the Chancellor's handouts for some reason or another. Lots of them seem to be falling through the gaps. And I think we will see a really different landscape, which will be to the detriment of, you know, the very varied and innovative and entrepreneurial small food brand business that we see nowadays or have seen. So I think it's a really sad time. I mean, there's lots of brave talk, but I think it's just, it's truly really hard for many, many people.
Yeah, you can try and mitigate any issues, but you can't mitigate a global pandemic. You know, that's not anything that you can predict.
And most people wouldn't have had it in their scenario planning in any way, shape or form. I mean, you know, did I ever have that there? Did I ever think that would wipe my business off the slate? No.
Unimaginable. How is it affect, like, how are you still able to offer some of your services? I know so many what you do is face to face. I mean, how is it affecting you and what are you doing?
Well, obviously, I had projects cancelled just before kind of lockdown happened. And I was saying to the client, let's do this sooner rather than later, because I kind of could see where it was headed. And they were like, no, we've got this timetable. We're going to stick to this. Mm-hmm. And then they came back and said, well, actually, now we can't do it, which was a certain, you know, amount of revenue gone when we could actually have done that almost in normal circumstances, which was their sort of concern. So that went, but I think it took me a while to realise that actually, who knows if any retailer would ever let me do this again, you know? So it's kind of quite cataclysmic. I mean, I went into M&S and there were some young staff members floating around in the self-service area with visors on, there was meter tape on the floor. And I just thought, I don't think any shopper until Corona goes away is going to want to talk to a total stranger, masks or no masks, aside from which you need to see people's faces to judge their, you know, their viewpoints. So much communication is lost under a mask. So I just sort of thought, actually, I'm kind of mourning the global situation, but also mourning probably the end of my business, which is a small thing in the scheme of things, but a big thing for me.
Yeah, of course, really, really difficult and sad. And but like you say, just, you know, this is just something that you could never predict. have you sort of started to think about, because obviously that's a big part of your business is what you do within the retail space, but your expertise is obviously also really valuable, you know, within sort of branding and general advice for food companies. Have you started to think about ways you might shift things, or are you just kind of taking a bit of time?
No, I am thinking about it, but I'm also watching a landscape where there are like a million consultants now popping up within the Bread and Jam Festival schedules for online advice, most of whom I've never heard of before. So it's a kind of really clouded landscape with a lot of people offering a lot of stuff. And, you know, I'm thinking, well, if I pop up in that with like a free offer, am I just A, going to get lost in the noise, and B, devalue what I do? But also bearing in mind what I do is supported by the hundreds of interviews that I do face-to-face in a variety of stores. So although I might have accumulated kind of general branding knowledge and food business knowledge, I probably don't have the specifics that companies want now, which is how do I get online and how do I sell and what do I do in social media to drive people to my website? And there's loads of other people who do that. I also think that people who maybe would have thought about launching will find retailers' doors are shut, because I know anecdotally from someone I know who's got an ice cream proposition, she just said everything's been put on hold. They're not interested in going forward where 2 months ago they were. So people like that who would have been coming up through the ecosystem are sort of stymied, if you like, and slowed down in their progress. So I'm just sort of sitting with it and thinking about it and wondering, you know, what to do. And I think there's also that thing, you just don't want to look too desperate by hawking your wares everywhere, although everybody on Instagram says get out and sell, you know, just get out and sell.
But you're right to be concerned about devaluing, which I think is really crucial and important. And as much as it's interesting that you say there's been this pressure to pivot. We're obviously, I haven't seen it, so it obviously depends on what kind of accounts that you follow. When I think, how can you fully pivot and commit to something when you don't know what the outcome of this is going to be? Could be 3 weeks, could be the end of the year. It would be difficult to invest and commit time to a new project or a kind of different version of something you're already doing with this complete unknown.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I suppose I feel that what I do has validity that's been proved by, you know, clients' results and clients' feedback over the years. So somebody said to me, why don't you just do online shopping interviews? And I said, for all the reasons that I originally developed this, that I think people's recall is clouded, there's an awful lot of online out there anyway, none of it seems terribly good. And I really loved about it, and this is why I'm sad, is I really enjoyed the encounters with shoppers. They were always funny and surprising and enlightening and entertaining, and don't think there was ever a day when I put on my thermals and went to work in the chilled aisles that I didn't actually have an encounter or two that just made me think that humans are really, really nice, kind people. Yeah. So I think that is also what I'm really missing at the moment, that thing where you're at the bus stop and you chat away to somebody, or you go into a store and you talk to people that you know. And then all of that, I think, has gone and has made me realise how much the human element in what I did was what made it valuable and useful, I think, and also just very, I don't know, very real. I think a lot of this online stuff doesn't always feel very real. Yeah. I'm just reading a book about listening and how much of communication is sort of non-verbal. It's something like 55%, you know, and if you're doing that through like a Zoom mechanism or something, which is jerky and staccato, apparently people get very, very tired after lots of Zoom meetings because it's out of sync and we're not able to read it in the way that we would in real time, if you like, if the person was right there.
Yeah, even something basic as knowing when it's your turn to speak. When Kat and I were doing a test, we're just constantly kind of jumping over each other because there's a little delay and we're not sure. And also you can't see the other person, so you don't have that visual clue either that they're about to finish their sentence. So yeah, there's that kind of, which is a bit difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. And that was actually in the article. They just said that's why people talk over each other. Because you would read someone else's body language. You would know it was your turn. But on Zoom, you can't do that. You just can't do that because it's so sort of chopped up.
Yeah. And going back to your kind of giving value to the brands and the companies that you're delivering this information to. I remember. I just wanted to highlight listeners to go back to your episode because you talk about that and how much information and why kind of the traditional rooms of people, eight people kind of giving information about your product was unreliable and unrealistic, and all the reasons why you're in supermarkets and why that's giving so much more information and more value, like you said.
Yeah, because you are getting people in that environment where they are actually doing that thing in the way that they normally would. And if you watch them for a bit, you know, before you go and pounce on them, which is what I used to do, then you're getting pretty much as close as you can get to, you know, how people behave in the wild.
Hmm.
And again, in this book I'm reading, which is called You're Not Listening by an American writer, she talks to someone who does do focus groups, and she says, actually, it's really difficult in America because people cheat their way into them. They lie. They pretend to meet the criteria for the particular group, whether they have to be a Fiat driver or a cheese eater or whatever. And, you know, it's in a supermarket, if people are looking at and picking up the product, you know that they are absolutely in the target market for your client's product. And there's just so much rich learning that you get even just about where the position of the product is on the shelf in the supermarket, if it's at the top or at the bottom or if it's in the middle. In terms of branding, it's so rich because people will pick it up and compare it with other things and tell you what they emotionally feel about it. And you know that the packaging has always succeeded if they hold on to it and they don't put it back on the shelf. So if they just literally hold it for longer, then there's something going on that they're attracted to it by. And all of that stuff, you can't replicate that online. It's just not possible because you can't do the 3D thing.
Yeah.
Of here's the actual product.
Okay.
Here's how it weighs. You know, this is how much it weighs. This is how fast it is. This is what it looks like. These are the colors that it is. You know, and you just can't do that with a flat, you know, display on a screen. It's not the same thing at all, and it's not in context either, so you know, you can't really, I don't think, test it. But anyway, I'm very, very wedded to my process. So I mean, I could still do the, you know, the hours branding discussions, which I do, where I review people's branding. And I would love to do that, but I actually feel slightly reticent about kind of putting that out there. And I don't know why that is. Maybe that's just me needing to get over that, frankly.
Well, yeah, I feel like that could work with you, them sending you the product. You'd be able to actually have it in your hands and you could have that conversation.
Yeah, and that does work even in PDFs, because if they've got an alternative set of branding routes, which often, because obviously agencies usually come up with six routes or so, and they're agonising about them. And also, in that case, if they're already an existing brand and maybe they're tweaking, I'll go and buy their existing product so that I've got it there and I can have a look at it, or they can, as you say, send it to me. So I think those things can still add a lot of value because I still have current knowledge about how people shop. Although I do think that psychologically, I think there's a flight to things when we're shopping that we think will keep us healthier in some way. I'm aware of it myself, eating a lot more veg, notwithstanding all the Pump Street chocolate and pith and nut I've been eating as well. But, you know, just actually thinking about cooking from scratch and trying as my husband said when we were striding through our 7 kilometers last night or whatever we were doing, and he said, oh, this is going to keep us fit and healthy against the virus. So I think at the back of your mind, often when you're shopping now, is going to be that thing of, even if it's subconscious, I need to keep myself healthy. But probably alongside that is a massive dollop of, I need anything that's going to make me feel good right now. So I think you've got those two things in play very much at the moment.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think, you know, also with slowing down, I think people are really enjoying, you know, people that don't normally cook from scratch are really enjoying that process. Lots of people are getting very interested in baking. And, you know, whatever you're cooking, whatever you're eating, if you're cooking it from scratch, it's kind of better for you anyway. And I think you're right, people are kind of somewhere in the back of their mind enjoying and seeing importance in things that are good for them. Tessa, when you say you're kind of reticent to put out there the sort of branding sessions you do, is that something just generally that you feel, or is that more kind of now not wanting to sort of be promoting and trying to find the right tone to do that with what's going on?
Yeah, I think trying to find the right tone is key. I did put something up on LinkedIn a week or so ago, and I felt kind of, you know, I don't know, that felt too soon. But I also think, you know, I know so well so many small brands just fighting to survive who might have been looking at developing new products or whatever, who would have come to me. But now their priorities are just so massively changed. That, you know, what would have been a, you know, we'll definitely do that, will have slid right down the list of priorities, because they won't be launching a new product, they won't be changing their packaging, they will just be entirely focused on trying to sell, you know, what they've already got, or finding new sales channels. I mean, this is what I see people are putting money into. So I think it probably needs a bit longer for the dust to settle.
Yeah. It's difficult, isn't it? Because it is. It's a balance between knowing how to approach things and how to approach sort of finding new business, and then also sort of an awareness of where people are with their businesses. But, you know, at the same time, you have a business as well, and you've got a lot of value to offer people. So there's no reason why I don't think you shouldn't be doing that, be posting on LinkedIn or whatever it is to see if anyone's interested. And I think it's not, you know, it's not the same as a sort of very salesy push, really, the sort of your approach.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I think Beth has got it absolutely right with, you know, with your charitable donations as part of what you're offering and your limited editions. And, you know, I think the brownies and the whole way that you write your newsletter, it's very sensitive and it's very tonally appropriate. And that actually takes time. I think you have to really think about that, because I think there's a lot of people out there who are really confused, who are hurting, who might be holding onto their money as well because they don't know how things are going to go. I mean, it's quite dark out there. I wish I could say it would be over in 3 weeks' time, but I seriously think we're going to have just such a changed environment. Certainly in food retail, and I think, you know, cafes, restaurants, all those other outlets, you know, that we all miss. You know, we'd love to go down to a local coffee shop and just sit alongside other people. I mean, I really yearn for that. I absolutely want to meet a friend for a latte somewhere that isn't over the phone with our separate mugs.
But I couldn't agree more. Yeah,
you know, I think a lot of people are apparently in the list of things. I was looking at Philippa Perry, who's a psychotherapist on Twitter, and Grayson Perry's wife, and she said to people, "What do you miss?" And that came up as a really high up the list thing. And we have a deli nearby us where you used to be able to go and sit in and have your coffee and look out the window and watch all the people passing by. And they still do coffee. So I went and got the coffee and I thought, oh, well, you know, maybe this will feel the same. But it actually didn't, because I was wandering around outside, not able to sit on a bench, holding the coffee. And it just really brought home to me, you know, the whole social distancing thing. It just, it was only, I don't know, a fifth of the experience, because it's about environment as well. It's so much about environment, and I think we've lost all these outside environments and casual social contact that we need as humans to thrive. You know, the smile from someone at the bus stop, the hello from someone who knows you in the greengrocers, you know, that may still be happening, but it's just much harder to access. And I think we all need to be knitted into that looser community, as well as our immediate families who are all missing. Sorry, this is sounding really dark. I'd like to be up.
No, I think you've got to give an honest reflection of how you're feeling and how you're coping. And I don't think, yeah, you don't need to apologize for how you feel.
Oh, thank you.
It's funny because it is those really small connections that, like, I twice a week I go to the post office, and honestly, like, the drive to the post office and then just like saying hi, it's always the same woman that works there, and I really look forward to just like saying hi to her, seeing how her week's been, and it's really sweet. And that's the only person I see other than my husband, really, and I really enjoy that kind of moment with her. And I think after this, whenever that may be, people will really appreciate those connections with sort of near strangers, and how much they actually punctuate a day and make it what it is.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I was walking down the road the other day to go and get something or other, and I met my neighbour, and I just had a little chat with her, and it felt like the richest thing that had happened to me that day, because otherwise it's just me and my husband and phone calls. And she's particularly lovely, and we just had a little chat, but somehow it was so special. And I thought, wow, this is a massive thing that ordinarily I'd have chatted to her but wouldn't have thought any more about it. It wouldn't have been something that I would actually have treasured in the course of the day, because you realise how much human contact means.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because I do think about how, you know, you leave like a friendship or a dinner with friends or anything, and you kind of feel lifted, and your mind feels lifted, and you feel a lot lighter. And yeah, I never thought about those little interactions with the shopkeeper or the person at the post office, the courier, so many of those that I do every day. And yeah, me too, I'm like, I love saying hello to the courier.
But yeah, I mean, I think hopefully we will all appreciate and connect and want to be with each other as the learning that comes out of this, as opposed to, you know, I don't think buying things apart from Beth's gorgeous brownies are the way to make yourself feel better in this scenario, that God knows I've been spending a lot at Neil's Yard on cheese. It's going to be just flinging your arms around someone that you haven't seen, you know, your best friend that you haven't seen. I mean, and just physically being around people and not 2 meters away. So I think there's hopefully, I mean, I could talk about the green aspects of this, but I think hopefully that's going to be the thing of how much we need each other.
People can really reflect on how much they already have. That's so much, and that's so much more than what many people across the globe currently have now. Pretty huge.
I think this is such a leveler. I mean, obviously it's levels people in countries that are less well equipped lower down, and that's a really worrying thing, and refugee camps and so on. But I think there is a feeling like that we are all over the world in this together, and maybe if we can learn from that as well. So if we come to look at climate change, that we can think, actually, you know, we need to think about all of these things more collectively than we ever have before, and actually just think about that. I mean, I'm not saying that consumerism and capitalism is broken, but I do wonder if this is, as Margaret Atwood said on Radio 4 this morning, which was really interesting, she said this is a massive reset, it's a massive pause, and people who say we'll go back to the normal, then maybe we shouldn't be aiming to go back to the normal, we should be aiming to, you know, reinvent the world properly again.
That's really interesting, because I actually saw there's a new podcast, I'm just going to get the details, from Rupi, the Doctor's Kitchen, and his newest episode, which came out today or yesterday, is with Professor Guy Standing, and he talks about a universal basic income. So this idea that everyone's on a similar income. I haven't listened to it, so I can't say too much about it, but it seems, you know, on a similar riff to that, perhaps
we don't go back to what it was, who knows?
I mean, I think there'll be a lot of people who are impoverished at the end of this. So I think we will be all leveled out to an extent. I mean, obviously not the super rich who've put themselves in their bunkers somewhere. But I think there will definitely be, we're all going to be paying more taxes to pay for all of this. And we've got quite a lot of people with a universal income coming their way for at least 3 months, and a lot of people who fall through that gap at the same time. At the moment, I think you've got a test bed. My daughter works in reducing carbon emissions at the Department of Transport, and she said, this is the most amazing set of data for what happens when you stop people moving around that we could ever have hoped to have. So, you know, maybe some great things will come out of that.
You kind of hope that out of this, that is one thing that people could really start to take note, because it's undeniable now what the positive effects could be from reducing things in the way that have been being talked about for the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've now got the data. You know, London is so much cleaner. The air is so much better.
Yeah.
You see people trotting about and doing their walking. You see, hopefully, people cooking from scratch if they can do that. You know, and you just wonder if this goes on for like another 3 weeks after that, maybe with some form of social distancing after that, whether that is enough time to ingrain some really interesting new habits, or whether there are, you know, negative things, as you say, from people who are trapped in their flat in a tower block and subject to domestic violence or whatever. I mean, you know, there's all of that, and mental health problems and depression. There's all that side as well. But I do think it is such a brilliant opportunity to think, how could we do things differently? And we don't really want a bunch of politicians saying, oh, we must get the economy going, because this is what they've done in the US, and they've released some of the environmental restrictions that they had, because they're saying we must get the economy moving at all costs. You know, whereas I think what Greta Thunberg said was basically, we should be looking at a Green Deal. You know, this is an opportunity now when we need to put people to work and create new industries to replace perhaps some of the ones that are really going to struggle. Then we could be really bold and decisive. And I think that is interesting politically, if that could happen, if we have people with enough vision to look at that. China have now basically, through this, and you know, it could have arisen, I guess, in another country. It just happened to arise in China. But, you know, they have basically destroyed their world markets for manufactured products, or created the conditions for depression where people, economic depression, where people can't buy them because they can't afford to, or they may think, well, actually, I don't need a new iPhone. It's not going to make me any happier in these circumstances. You know, so, and there's the shortage of supply and this kind of thing. So I think it is very interesting that for China, who depended on the world consuming what it produces, you know, those conditions have now not been met, if in a sense. So, you know, do we need to have more of a global consensus now about this is what we do and what we don't do, so that these things like pandemics can't happen again, or we can minimize the risk of them happening? You know, are people thinking that far ahead? And, you know, and I think there's so many really interesting kind of concepts and ways of thinking about how this arose and what we can do better in the future. That is possibly one optimistic thing that has come out of it, maybe.
Yeah, it would be good if we could move to a more preventative and strategy and kind of more of a coexistence. I just think it's interesting that there's been this incredible kind of boost given from the government to save businesses and to help out people who are really struggling. And I appreciate that some people have not benefited from that. But many, you know, a million people have applied for universal credit, for example. It would be incredible if we could be in the position where people were helped before this. People weren't already struggling, or weren't already in a place where they were not safe, and this has only exacerbated that situation for them.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's basically shown us how limited the welfare state is now, and that if you run it down and you make it this threadbare on all levels, then it doesn't hold. You know, when the centre goes, it doesn't hold anymore because we've run it down and we've just reduced it. And who would have thought that under a Conservative government we would see that level of giving ever, you know, in our lifetime? So that is really interesting. I guess there is a question for, you know, the economy long term, but, you know, interest rates are low, the government can issue bonds. I mean, America went through this in the Great Depression and they spent a lot of money afterwards creating jobs for people, just to have people in work. You know, and we may yet have to do the same thing here. So I think there's probably some scope for some really interesting, innovative thinking here.
Yeah, like you were saying with the farming, kind of that more of that coexistence, like moving back to not necessarily organic methods, maybe some organic methods, or just methods that are less intensive on livestock and the earth in general, and more in balance with nature as opposed to destructive.
Yeah, I would hope so. And I think, you know, one of the things that you see in small businesses is their ability to be resourceful. I mean, you know, delis and bakeries around me who've managed to keep on baking bread and get it out there to people, delis who are delivering Crosstown Donuts, who are doing whole boxes of stuff to send out to people. You know, I just think the amount of incredible pivoting that small food businesses have been able to do to survive and also get their food to people that need it is amazing and just really heartening.
It's amazing. My the people I get veg from, I get them from a company, it's all like UK grown produce. And they said they went from 150 orders a week generally to 800.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, my mum, and she's in the little village near Henley, basically she was living out of the village shop, which was doing an amazing job of making connections with local growers and local producers so that they could get little food parcels to the vulnerable, because she is really in tight lockdown. And that is a whole different scenario. You know, but I think that level of innovation and willingness and the strength of community is the other thing that's really come out of this, which is just so heartening and wonderful. The uncertainty is the hardest thing, I think, for everyone.
Yeah, definitely. It's really difficult. It's hard to, because there's just not really a way of processing. There's no end to your thought process. It just kind of keeps going and you never know.
Well, I'm hoping we all get into being able to do the things that we all love and see all the people that we love again before too long, because I think that's actually more important than swimming in the scheme of things.
Yeah.
Is there anything you'd like to add, Tessa?
I don't know. I think just sending hugs to everyone out there who's just having a really hard time. And if you're a food business, you know, keep on keeping on, because you're bringing joy to people in situations where actually I think food and becomes really significant. It's become really important to me. It always was, but I think it's become even more important. And I suppose I just want to say, I salute you. If you're managing to get your products out to people in these tricky circumstances, then you are bloody heroes. You know, you just deserve a round of applause.
Yeah, it's so nice that you can still send things to people. I sent some flowers to my mum maybe a couple of weeks ago for Easter. Yeah, it just felt nice that there's people locally who are still operating and you can still get things out to, you know, wherever your family lives.
That is nice. I think it's getting hard. It seems to be getting harder and harder. So what are you going to do with this series?
There'll be episodes of kind of 20 to 30 minutes long. It'll be nice at the moment for people to hear what everyone else is doing and thinking and story, you know, because that's what we've always tried to do, is just share the stories behind the scenes. And I think especially at the moment, it'll be really nice for people to, you know, especially if someone's, you know, got a new food business and they're not sure what's going on, it'll be nice for them to hear from other people, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I am listening to Courier podcast, as you may be, which is, you know, really quite short and snappy and interesting. And it's interesting because you can hear people who've got business models and they're just like, we don't know what we can do. And then there's a few other people who are managing to kind of, you know, hang on and think their way through it. And I think that putting that out is really helpful to people.
I think it's both, isn't it? Because it really depends on your type of business as to whether you can continue operating. And I don't feel like people should feel that pressure or feel bad for not being able to continue as they were. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think if you're able to hold out and kind of resume when things go back, and I do think things will maybe not return to how they were, but they still return, your business will be able to return. Yeah, I think if you're able to hold out, that's also okay. I don't think you need to do this. Right, pivot, let's new business plan, you know.
I actually think for a lot of people that probably having an e-commerce thing was perhaps something was on their list, and maybe this just accelerates it, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Makes them think about their offer. And it's, you know, I understand that people who do e-commerce websites are so busy right now. But yeah, I mean, I would like to think that, you know, we will come through this older and wiser and better for it. Let's hope so. Because I would be so sad if the world was, you know, had fewer artisan food businesses in it, because they are just so consoling. You know, when I get my girls who grind coffee through the post or Pump Street, they're familiar, comforting things that predated this. So they're things to cling to and to enjoy and to really savour. So I guess that's, you know, what I would end on, really.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tessa.
Well, lovely to see your sweet faces.
Thanks for the support.
Thanks, Tessa.
Stay safe.